CKUW broadcasts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with all the programming done by volunteers. Check out our diverse schedule at ckuw.ca.
Segment of our show, Thavara J. Akmarin and Abby Spudzinski will be telling us a little bit about Possibilities Project Plus. So if you could introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about Possibilities Project Plus, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Excuse me. Sorry. Thanks so much for having us, Cam. So my name is Abby. I am a graduate student at Western University, and I help to coordinate the Possibilities Project Plus alongside Thavara.
I'll quickly introduce myself as well. My name is Thavara, and I am a research associate at Parkwood Institute Research, and I also help coordinate some of the work we're doing at Possibilities.
So, give me an overview of a little bit of the project's work.
Absolutely. So I can give you a little bit of history, if that works for you, Cam.
Absolutely.
So the Possibilities Project actually started around a decade ago with a group of clinicians from Parkwood Institute in London, Ontario. And the Possibilities Project was primarily a funding, initiative, fundraising devices, assistive devices for persons living with a disability. And 10 years later, that's when the Possibilities Project Plus emerged, and that's what Thavara and I are speaking about today. But essentially, the Possibilities Project Plus operates more like a free assistive devices marketplace, so connecting donors that are looking to donate a device to individuals who are in need of an assistive device, and really trying to connect those linkages. So it operates really similar to something like Facebook Marketplace or Kijiji. However, like I had mentioned, all the devices that are listed are free of charge. So definitely the Possibilities Project Plus came from a need of just recognizing that the financial barriers do exist, and hopefully help to bring some mitigation strategies along with that. Thavara, I don't know if you had anything else to add.
No, I think you covered it really well, Abby. We were just understanding that there was two issues. One was that many individuals can't afford many assistive devices. Here in Ontario, assistive devices are only funded partially, which can still leave a significant out-of-pocket cost to many individuals. And many individuals also, when, for example, they reach end of life and no longer have use for assistive devices, they often end up in landfills. And so we've seen two gaps that can be addressed through this marketplace, and we're hoping to kind of bridge some of the issues around access for individuals who may face barriers.
So I'm curious, what are some of the most requested items? Where's the greatest need?
Yeah, that's a great question, Cam. Definitely to date, and we've been live and operational since August of 2023. And I would say the majority of the devices that we've seen are more mobility focused, so being wheelchairs, walkers, canes. And part of that may be the fact that we are here at Parkwood Institute in London, Ontario, which is definitely more mobility-focused rehabilitation center. So a lot of the individuals that have been using Possibilities Project Plus to date do have some kind of mobility-related disability. So I think we're biased towards that, but we also want to share the fact that we are trying to be inclusive to all disability types. But to answer your question, today mainly have been mobility focused.
So, in your time with the project, and this question is for each of you, has there been any success moment or story you'd like to share?
Ooh, that's a good question. Thavara, do you want to start?
Definitely. I think one of our biggest successes for my reception was actually at the outset of in the development phases of Possibilities Project Plus. And so what this was that when we were creating and developing it, we were creating the website alongside many students. We're also connected with Western University, as Abby mentioned. So we have a lot of student volunteers, clinicians from Parkwood, and researchers. And so we were trying our best to really involve individuals with lived experience of disability in the actual development of the project. And so to truly do that, we actually enlisted the use of a health equity impact assessment, which was actually created by the Ministry of Health in Ontario. And it helped us determine and assess how we're potentially creating more barriers or negative impacts and address them collaboratively. And so originally, Possibilities Project Plus was just going to be an online marketplace. But after doing the assessment and hearing from a lot of diverse perspectives, we were actually able to tailor it better, having an in-person service for maybe individuals who don't have that digital literacy, any language barriers, and aren't just comfortable maybe using the internet or the online portion. So we were actually able to, from the outset, ensure that we're kind of considering more broader perspectives and able to tailor the program a little better. And I think that's something we continue to do to this day iteratively. So I think that was a big, I think, success from my perception. Abby, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, that was a great response, Abarha. I think the one thing that I can bring, we are now, as of I think last year, an official affiliate program of St. Joseph's Healthcare. So that's been really exciting, just to get the support from some of the leadership here at the hospital. Definitely a big portion of this project is we do recognize that we are exchanging used devices, and with that, I think there's risk. But we've been so lucky to work very collaboratively with the Risk and Privacy Department here at St. Joseph's, and they really helped to, I guess, teach us about those processes and to ensure that this is as safe as possible, just given the fact that we are exchanging used devices. And I'm also excited to share that we've almost bridged the 100th device transfer, so we're just right out the 100 mark, and I think that'll be really exciting when we do pass that number. So it's been really amazing to see some of the growth over the past year or so.
Yeah, that's great, Abby.
So, are there any projects on the horizon, or what are the next steps for the project?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a great question.
Yeah, Abby, maybe you can maybe talk about the two different arms, maybe the service, and I can talk a little bit about the research work.
Sounds great. So like the Barha mentioned, definitely I feel like this is such an iterative project in the sense of that we're learning as we go, and then with that we're making some change. So Barha had mentioned that through the needs identified in the health equity impact assessment that we ran, definitely the fact that this is primarily an online platform does pose some barriers for some individuals in the community. So since then, we've developed an in-person and on-site service. Essentially, there's a team of us here at Parkwood, all volunteer students from Western University in London, Ontario, that are helping to really facilitate the exchange of the devices. So how this may work, if there's maybe a clinician that's in need of, let's say, an 18 by 18 manual wheelchair for a patient that's being discharged in a few weeks. And as the agent team, we take that information and we try to find that device. So we've been working with some of our community partners into making sure that there's enough accessibility for devices for those that are on site here at Parkwood. And then eventually we hope to transfer that device over to the individual in need. So definitely, I think learning from those with lived experience of how to make this program as accessible as possible is definitely an area that we would like to continue to grow in, I'd say.
Yeah, that's great, Abby. And then, so as mentioned a little earlier, so that was a little bit about the service, but we actually, given the great group, number of researchers also on this project, we do have a research arm in addition to the service arm. And we recognize that Possibilities Project Plus is essentially a band-aid solution to the issues around the gap to accessing assistive devices. And what we envision and hope for in the future is to let individuals have the ability, the support from initiatives or the government to access those assistive devices that they potentially can't afford or can't access. And so a big part of that is creating data and research around the importance and the needs for these assistive devices. And so So one of our the work we do in the background is trying to engage individuals, persons with lived experience, and conducting research around the impact and the barriers around assistive devices. We work closely with our community partners, Spinal Cord Injury Ontario Disability Advocacy Group, that's had a history in trying to create policy change. And so we hope that this research we're doing is going to eventually inform more policy change and ultimately lead to better outcomes in terms of assistive device access. So in terms of our next steps in the near future, we've been applying to a few different grants around funding for research, but also grants for funding for our services. We hope that we're able to scale in terms of our geographic reach, hopefully broader to not just the London and surrounding community, but across Ontario. So we're working on a few grants in the background, trying to create some more data, but then also hoping to get some funding to potentially scale our services.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
In this segment of our show, Peter Parsons will be giving us an update on his goal ball work. So what's the latest with your goal ball work?
Well, we just recently had a tournament in Montreal, the Montreal Open. And yeah, our team won the bronze medal. And it was a great tournament. Like, there were 10 men's teams and 8 women's teams. I say our team, my men's team, won the bronze medal. Our Nova Scotia A women's team also won the bronze medal. And to note, our 15-year-old Harry Nickerson won the scoring title. Like, he scored the most goals. He scored 39 goals, and that was more than any player in the tournament, which includes all the top Canadian players as well as some top American players that were up for the tournament.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with the sport, you tell me a little bit about how it's played and some of the benefits therein.
Yeah, so goal ball is a Paralympic sport for the blind and visually impaired. It's played on a volleyball-sized court. The court is the exact dimensions of a volleyball court. It's 9 meters wide and 18 meters long. And there's 2 4-foot-high nets at each end of the court that runs the entire width of the court. And so you have 3 players on the court at once. You can have as many as 6 players on a team. And you have to throw the ball on the floor. It has to be on the floor before the 6-meter line or the high ball line, or else it's a penalty. And a penalty, you're one-on-one, so you have someone thrown at you. You're defending that 9-meter net by yourself. So at that point, you're more like a soccer goalie. You're starting from standing and you're ready to dive for it. Whereas when it's 3-on-3, as you'll see most of the game, you're covering that 3-meter area, each person, to cover the 9-meter total net. So you're playing from a knee or on your hip and diving or sliding on your side to block that ball that's coming. Yeah, it's kind of challenging to describe, but there's lots of videos on YouTube that someone can check it out, especially, you know, where it is a Paralympic sport. It just had the Paralympics in Paris. We had our women's team there. Our men's team, unfortunately, didn't qualify, but we're really hoping to qualify for LA 28. Before LA 28, we have the America's Go Ball Championships in July in Brazil. And it's a qualification tournament for the World Championships in 2026 in China.
So I'd imagine that with the sport itself, these athletes do some pretty intense training. How do they go about being at their athletic best to be ready to be out on the court?
Yeah, we do a lot of training. For those of us in the national program, we're expected to put so many hours of training a week. So we're doing lots of weight training. And lots of cardio. So yeah, our strength and conditioning is really important. And of course, getting on that go ball court and having our team practices is really important as well. The thing I didn't mention with go ball, the kind of the catch to it, is that everybody's blindfolded. So no matter what level of visual impairment you have, we're all on an equal playing field. So you have to hear the bells on the ball and you feel the lines on the court that are raised to maintain your orientation. So it's very mental sport. Like, you have to be very mentally focused, especially on that defensive end of things, to be able to hear that ball and react to it. So, you know, the better shape you're in, the better you're able to maintain that mental focus a lot of times as well. You know, if your heart rate is at a decent level, you're going to be able to react to that ball. So, yeah, lots of physical and mental training as well.
So, in your time with the sport, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Yeah, well, I might have some recency bias here, but winning the bronze medal this weekend in Montreal was really big because it would be considered an upset in our bronze medal game because me as a veteran with the other two kids that I'm starting with, 22-year-old Nick Gentleman and 15-year-old Harry Nickerson, we're playing against two players on the other side that have lots of international experience on the U.S. national team, and winning that was big. Now, the year before, we won the Montreal Open. Myself and my teammates Mason Smith, Griffin Hiltz, as well as Matt Gentleman. And so that was big. I'd say my main points would be when we won nationals just last year on our home court, because we hosted nationals last year here in Halifax, and we won in a shootout against BC in the gold medal game, and we had quite the crowd, probably the biggest crowd I've seen just for like a non-international tournament, so that was huge. And also I'd go back to 2015 and 2016 when we won back-to-back nationals for the first time in Nova Scotia history. Making the national team for myself for the first time for 2019 in Lima, Peru, that was a highlight as well.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, sure.
Thanks.
Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Whether you're on the go or staying home, make CJAM the soundtrack to your day. Tune into 99.1 FM on your radio or visit cjam.ca to listen live or access past shows. You can also stream us right from iHeartRadio. Just visit iHeartRadio.ca or download the iHeartRadio app. And if you feel like it, connect with us on social media. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at CJAM FM. Keep yourself close to the music. CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard about Possibilities Project Plus from Thavara J. Akmaran and Abby Spidzinski, and Peter Parsons gave us an update on his goal ball work. In this segment of our show, Mark Rosner will be sharing a little bit of his disability work. So, could you tell me a little bit about your work and its impact on the disability community?
BigRecords.world is the website, and that is my record company. I'm in Vancouver, Canada, and we have spent the last 15 years building that. One thing that has been very important is establishing a deeper meaning with what we do in our company and as individuals. And when we became aware of the Disability Channel, Jay Stoyan, and it just opened up a wonderful way of, creating deeper meaning that we can help people in the disability community. Work with, there's lots of artists that can relate and that are in that community as well. And that's particularly where we focus on the artists, and then that opens up that community for us. So we're doing fundraisers, and it all stems from the Disability Channel with Jay Stoyan.
So
Do you find that using music is sort of a cool, relatable way to spread the message about the need for disability inclusion?
100%. You know, this world has become so busy. There's so many things floating around to draw people's attention that you have to have a stage. You have to have a vehicle to just simply get people's attention. And so music, of course, is a way because music does touch people around the world. It's a common theme to, you know, there's very few people who aren't impacted by music. And so that's a way that we can help to draw attention to people with disabilities from there. And that's specifically here what we're talking about is using our platform, if you will, our reach for that cause. Now, it's similar to other areas that we deal in as well, and so we like to be well-rounded because, you know, it's cross-pollination. For instance, the amount of people that we can have in our ecosystem, our marketing, and in our circles, those people join in, and then they find, you know, others in that community. So it's bringing multiple communities together to help all the general, causes that need attention. So we try to be open to many areas trying to help. One example, just to use one, is we are supporters of the Wilder Institute, which deliver help to countries in the world that are that have endangered species, endangered animals, that they need funding to help, draw attention and awareness. And that is something that we would get behind, and then, you know, as a result of all of their reach around the world, then we can draw attention to people with disabilities and vets and first responders and other, you know, and all, because, again, the community, the world is full of great people. We often see on the news the ones that aren't so great. They really dominate the news because people have a fascination with train wrecks. Okay, so what is missing is, and I've often thought about this, is I'd love to see a good news network, you know, that kind of thing, positive stories. And there again, you get into the marketing. How do you get people to watch that, right? But I think this is probably speaks to my heart, to wanting to bring something good to the world in general through music. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So if you could send any message to the community about the need for disability inclusion and for music to unite the disability community and to draw attention to what needs to be done, what would you say about the importance?
As far as the importance goes, I think connecting to the people that are the difference makers. First of all, if there's events online or in your community that are being put on to try to help, you need to be present. If you're in the community, you need to be involved. Second of all, to those out there who have the means, you know, we know there are the haves and the have-nots in the world, and so we need the haves to look at their lives as being blessed and giving back, and that's I think the message that we're looking to send, and we're doing an event here on February 2nd coming up here this today. Is it the 10th or 11th, something like that, of January. On February the 2nd, we are at the White Rock Legion 008, and that is in White Rock, B.C., which is maybe a 25-minute drive outside of Vancouver towards the USA border. And we're we're putting on a fundraiser there, and we're trying to include as many people and businesses and those who want to help. There is an interesting aspect to this, thanks to one of our sponsors. It's called HiveMusic.com, H-I-V-E-D, HiveMusic.com, is supplying the live stream for the event. And we are making, spending some money and involving some good professionals to provide a great live stream, the good lighting, the great sound. Of course, there's great artists there. We've got some surprises and celebrity surprises and people from the community, the Chamber of Commerce and these kinds of things. You know, people are rallying behind from that community coming out, and it's about 200 capacity in the room, so you've got to get your tickets pretty darn quick to make sure you're in there. But if you're not in the White Rock area, anywhere you are in the world, you can tune into the live stream of it. So it's from 2 o'clock in the afternoon till about, at the latest would be 6, from 2 till 6, and that's Pacific time out here in Vancouver area, on the February 2nd, that's a Sunday. And so, you know, kick back and enjoy watching that. I believe it's $10, and then you can donate as well to the Disability Channel. It's all full write-off. You get a receipt and that kind of thing. So go to HiveMusic.com and look for, it's called Vetstock, V-E-T, like Woodstock, but for veterans and that kind of thing. But it's disability, those with disability and first responders and just everything we can do. You know, we're making an effort to bring the Disability Channel's programs out to British Columbia and have the government and the people involved to support the Disability Channel programs. This is programs that help provide a transition from veterans from the battlefield into the workforce, and there's some unique challenges that they have. We're also in support of the Invictus Games, which is coming up in about a few weeks here. That was started by Prince Harry for veterans with disabilities, and we're in support of that. We're raising money there and drawing awareness for the games themselves. And I will be at the games. That's the Invictus Games. I will be there, and I have a media accreditation for that as well. So that was a long answer. I apologize. But I try to get as much in as I can, and hopefully there's some good info there.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. Hey, friends. I love what Possibilities Project Plus is doing, providing supplies and resources to persons with disabilities when they might not be able to get those things for themselves. The need remains. The availability, that's another story. But bridging that gap, making it possible for someone with a disability to get what they need, to be at their best, to live at their best, really speaks to the best of humanity. And honestly, we need more initiatives like that, giving back to the community, not for the prestige, not for the idea that we can break our arms patting ourselves on the back, but just for the fact that it's the right thing to do, to encourage our fellow human beings to live and to be at their best. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on.